Hello, and welcome back to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoy your stay. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Zach.
Twice before on this podcast, we have gone into depth on good resources for current and aspiring data scientists. Today is our third time doing that. To be an impactful data scientist, you need to have knowledge of a lot of areas, or at least have the ability to gain that knowledge. Understanding books, courses, and other resources that have been helpful for other data scientists helps with both. So in the spirit of that, we're going to talk about some books, courses, and or resources this month that could be helpful for you. Be sure to check the show notes this month. We're going to give links to all of the resources we're discussing so that you can check them out yourself and get more detail on them as you're assessing. The first guest we have on this month is Tommy. Tommy, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
It's been a few episodes since we've had you on, so I think we should probably do the full intro again. Could you remind the audience who you are, what you do at Klaviyo, and I guess which team you're on?
Yeah, so I am Tommy Blanchard. I am a senior manager on the data science team, recently promoted to senior. And I run what we call internally the DISCO team, which is the data science team that serves internal stakeholders and some of our infrastructure R&D teams.
It's wonderful. We'll probably have to have a full episode going into the DISCO acronym itself. It's one of the best things we've come up with as a team, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about a book. So I'm going to start off pretty basic here. What book are we here to talk about today?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Doing Bayesian Data Analysis, which is a big, chunky textbook, but I think a really excellent resource.
Excellent.
So generally speaking, what does this book teach you?
So, I mean, exactly what you would think from the name. It teaches you how to do Bayesian data analysis. But more broadly, I think the reason this kind of stands out to me as a resource to call out, and it's probably the book that I have most often pulled off my bookshelf myself or recommended to others, is because it's a really great introduction to kind of taking the Bayesian mindset to data more generally, and was my introduction to thinking through and applying Bayesian generative models to difficult problems. So I think being able to understand Bayesian generative models and Bayesian data analysis, it just gives you, I don't even want to say it's a different tool, it's more like a different lens to apply to different problems. And sometimes taking that different lens, suddenly a problem that like was really hard to formulate using traditional frequentist statistics or like machine learning techniques, suddenly it can be really easy to frame in this other way. And so that's a sign that like, hey, maybe you should be approaching this from a more Bayesian point of view. So that's a kind of invaluable tool. I just said it's not a tool. It's a valuable lens.
I'm going slightly off script here, but I'm curious. Can you think of any examples of kind of when that lens has been especially helpful to apply to a project in the past?
Yeah, I mean, one fairly recent example was looking at, we were doing some analysis for pricing. So how should we price our products? We had a bunch of survey responses, and it was really hard to think through the mapping from the survey responses to what do people actually prefer? How much would they actually be willing to pay? And from that to what would actually make us the most money? And so we took a Bayesian approach where we just kind of said like, okay, we know like these are the responses we got. What distribution of willingness to pay would generate these kinds of responses? And once we kind of took that lens to it, suddenly this like kind of gnarly problem that was hard to formulate in a way that at least I could wrap my head around, suddenly it just like was very simple to think through. And even though I at the time was fairly rusty in thinking through generative models, after, you know, a few minutes of thinking it through and it kind of flooding back to me, it was just like, oh, let's just write down these things. And it became very straightforward.
I like that. I think that gives us an idea of the answer to this next question. But I guess to go into more depth, why is this book helpful for someone who works in data science?
Yeah, I think the additional lens that it gives you and the way that it allows you to reformulate problems. And so just to like, I feel like this is all kind of very abstract. So let's like make this a little bit more concrete. Like, let's take a really classic example of you have a coin, you're flipping it. Is it a biased coin or not? If you're doing that in a frequentist framework, you know, you can apply a p-value and like see how much does this deviate from what you would expect. But it's kind of awkward, like what p-value would you consider the threshold, right? Like 0.05 is sort of the standard in scientific circles. But it's, you know, we all know that's an arbitrary threshold. With a coin, you often have more information, right? Like you can look at the coin and say like, oh, this is a standard United States quarter. I have a lot of experience with those in general. I think they're very likely to be fair coins. This looks like a totally legitimate, untampered with coin. Or maybe it doesn't, right? Like, and if it doesn't, that's really informative too. So how do you incorporate that information? Well, in the frequentist framework, I'm not saying that you can't do it, but it's not as natural and straightforward. Whereas in the Bayesian framework, you can just say, well, let's just like draw a distribution that kind of captures my feelings going into this. Like how surprised would I be if this was not a fair coin? So you can kind of like quantify your feelings in a prior, and that is applied in a very straightforward way. And the model will tell you, well, this is kind of how you should feel after seeing this series of coin flips. So that's just like a really cool way. And like, I think these become much more interesting when you kind of add layers. So kind of do hierarchical things. So maybe you're curious about, is factory A that generates coins, does it have more defects than factory B? And you can kind of build up these layers, even if the only thing you are able to observe is coin flips of individual coins. Maybe you know which factory they come from. All those things are really easy to formulate in a Bayesian generative model, but would be really hard problems to try to think through, like how to do the test properly and how to like map in the aspects that you're certain about, the aspects that you have some feelings about, but aren't there's some level of uncertainty and observations, and have them all come together in a coherent way. That's really hard to think through in other frameworks, but with Bayesian generative models, super simple. You're just writing down like, oh yeah, there are factories, coins come from them in some proportion. Here's what I know about these coins. Here's my feelings going in. Like it's really straightforward, but it requires this whole mindset change.
Yeah, this is very relevant to our upcoming OKR around coin prediction. So we've been doing a lot of hard work here on that problem. But yeah, you've hinted on this a little bit, you know, describing it as a lens and like even this kind of straightforward example. You know, I really agree that Bayesian statistics is a framework for viewing the world that it's kind of one of those branches of math that when you learn it, you kind of can't stop seeing it everywhere in the world and can't stop thinking about how to apply it to even just the most simple everyday problems. So definitely would recommend that people check this out or look into Bayesian statistics. But kind of on that note, are there specific skills that this book covers or specific mindsets that it communicates that you find yourself using on a daily basis?
Yeah, on the mindset side, absolutely. In a way, because it once you are in the mindset of thinking about generative models that like, oh, what you have is kind of, if you think of like kind of a, almost like a tree structure where at the top you have, you know, the first step in some generative process and at the bottom you have your observations. That's how I end up thinking about a lot of problems. Like, oh, I'm observing the end product. What came before? How should I be kind of formulating that? And that's a way of thinking that I bring to a lot of problems, especially again, as soon as I run into a problem where it's like, I'm not sure how to think about this in terms of this is not a straightforward classification problem. This is not a straightforward like hypothesis testing where I have a well-formulated null hypothesis and I know which statistical test to do. As soon as I run into that, I know, hey, what if I just like flip this around, just think about like, where is this data coming from? Where are these observations from? Can I write that down? Do I have a good idea of it? And if I don't, like, where's that uncertainty? Because if I know where my uncertainty is on the generative process. I can just map that uncertainty into a generative model, and that becomes the generative process that, as far as I know. So it's definitely a very useful skill.
So who would you recommend reads this book? Is this aimed at beginners or experts, both or neither?
I think it's probably something that would not make sense to pick up as kind of your first data science skill, because frankly, like, even as much as I love the mindset that it gives you, at the end of the day, when you're out there in the world, frequentist statistics are way more common. Using classification, regression, clustering, all of those tools that we use so often, knowing kind of the more standard versions of them is just like way more practical. So I don't think it makes sense to pick this up as an absolute beginner. But I think as long as you are somebody who has prior understanding, like has the kind of more foundational skills, more common skills mastered, and you're looking for to expand your mindset and you like thinking about things in terms of distributions, it can be a really useful skill for, you know, people in the intermediate to expert phase, I'd say.
I noticed you back off of the pun there, prior knowledge. I guess that's what the book gives you.
Yeah.
I guess along those lines, did this book have any light bulb moments for you? Moments where you really just kind of, oh, I get it now. Or other moments you really just enjoyed in the book overall?
I think I'll say two things on this. One, on the more serious side, there are a lot of descriptions of problems. And when you're going through that mindset shift from thinking through everything in terms of frequentist statistics to learning to think about things from a Bayesian lens, there were a lot of moments where I'd read a problem, think I got it, and then just like have to sit there and just think for like 15 minutes. I'm describing it as if like, oh yeah, just write down the Bayesian generative process. It's like if you've ever learned a language like Lisp, the joke is, oh, you just write four lines of code, but it took you like 5 hours to think of those four lines. Bayesian generative model are kind of similar. Like it's, you end up with something way simpler and more elegant than the frequentist counterpart, but the amount of brain power that you have to put into it might be equivalent. So that's, you know, just not so much a light bulb moment, but definitely a lot of moments of where it's required me to put in the work and like really turned my mind around on like how to think through certain problems, like kind of like from the ground rework of how to think about certain problems. And that was incredibly valuable. Other moments that I really enjoyed. So the author of this is like one of the reasons I like this book in particular. The author is playful. And there's just all kinds of sections that are just really fun. The way he describes things, like it's very casual and approachable and just overall really fun. So really enjoyed just the author's voice in this, what could have been a very dense, dry math textbook.
I've certainly run into a number of those, especially in this field. A lot of textbooks are very dry. Obviously, that's not an answer to this question because we know that there's a lot of playful moments in it, but what do you not like about this book? Obviously, we have the tone that's great. We have a lot of the insight that you got of it from that's great. What isn't good about it?
My biggest problem with it and why I don't recommend it, especially to beginners as often, is just it is in R, JAGS, and STAN. And JAGS and STAN, probably most people don't know what those are, and that's totally fine. R, you probably know, is like, oh, that's an alternative to Python. And at least here at Klaviyo, we're pretty Python heavy. And so like the tool set that they use, the code examples are and or STAN. STAN is a statistical programming language that you can call in either Python or R, but it's a little bit janky, the implementation. So I'm not a huge fan of the tooling. It's not like amazing. There are tools in Python like PyMC that do more or less the same thing that I would probably recommend somebody interested in Bayesian modeling use first. But as soon as you've learned one, it's very easy to learn another. So somebody that does the exercises in STAN and then goes to PyMC, everything will be super familiar. So it's not that big an issue.
I actually used this book in a college course, and I still am a little shaken up from the final project of having to use JAGS and just trying to make that work was really impossible, grueling experience. So can confirm that it's maybe not the most user-friendly approach here. Is there anything else that we should know about this book?
Well, one really important thing that we have not talked about is the front cover, which Zach, you commented on. There are four doggies on the front cover. I believe that's the way the author himself refers to them. And speaking of sections that I really enjoyed, he actually has a section where he describes why he chose these specific doggies to represent each of the components of Bayes' equation. So it is that section alone is worth getting the textbook for.
Yeah, I'm hooked. I need to know why these particular doggies were chosen for the cover.
Gotta go get the book.
Yeah. Well, anyone out there listening right now who has the same revelation I have that you have to go get this book and learn more about these canines, go ahead and check out the show notes. We'll have more info on how to find where to find this book. And if you're interested in learning more about Bayesian analysis, definitely consider it. Thank you for your time, Tommy. Thank you for coming on and explaining this book to us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And we'll see you next time. And next up this episode, we have Smit. Smit, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be back.
Yeah, it's been a few episodes since you've been on, so I'd like to go through the full introduction. Could you give us a reminder of who you are, what team you're on, and what you do here at Klaviyo?
My name is Smit. I work as a senior machine learning engineer on the data science platform team. We basically cater to data scientists customers, and we provide tools and platforms to help data scientists move their models from the research phase to production phase as quickly as possible.
Very nice.
Cool. Well, Smit, welcome to the podcast. What resources are we here to talk about today?
So we can talk about resources that can help people who want to have a career in data science, who want to pursue a career in data science. So you need to know math and programming. So today we're going to talk more about the programming side of things. For programming, you'd need a couple of things. You'd need to know the basics of data structures and algorithms, and then you'd need some data science specific courses. So for data structures, I'd recommend checking out an MIT course on YouTube called Intro to Algorithms. And then for data science specific courses, I've taken a course on Udemy called Intro to Data Science and Machine Learning Bootcamp. And yeah, that's a very useful course to get started in this area.
I think you gave us the very high level overview, but I want to go into a little more depth here. Generally speaking, what do these courses teach you?
So with the Intro to Algorithms course from MIT on YouTube, you'd understand a lot of core data structures and algorithms that would help you code better. You can probably get away without taking a data structures or algorithms course, but then you'd take a lot more time to write your code. You won't know what the code does, and then that would be very less efficient. So, you know, I'd highly recommend someone who wants to get started with data science at least know the basics of data structures and some basic algorithms. For someone who wants to do more programming and less math, who wants to be an ML engineer, I'd recommend, you know, diving a little more deep into the algorithms course and learning some more complex algorithms. And if we talk about the Intro to Data Science and Machine Learning Bootcamp, once you have a basic understanding of the data structures and algorithms, you'd want to dive right into data science. So what the Udemy course teaches you is some of the basic libraries like NumPy, Pandas, and Matplotlib that you regularly use as a data scientist. So, you know, you get familiar with these libraries that you'd probably use on a day-to-day basis. And that would really help you get started on some core data science stuff. And they would also touch a little bit of machine learning and, you know, exploratory data analysis through some examples. So yeah, that's very useful.
Yeah. So I'm hearing kind of introduction to the basic data structures and ways of writing code. I'm hearing like exposure to some of the practical tools that you will end up using in data science work. I guess to ask the question in another way, what are the most useful things that you think someone who's in the position of taking these courses would get from taking these courses?
The most useful things I'd say is just like laying the foundations of a big career in data science that are like core data structures, core NumPy, Pandas expertise, because eventually, if you grow in your career, you'd need to get expertise here, even if you start without learning all of these. So, you know, getting these early would help you just get a kickstart on people who've never taken these courses, who don't have good foundations, and, you know, you'd be able to learn things faster.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, you know, even if most of your day-to-day work is just kind of heads down, you know, using models, having the background of algorithms and data structures and algorithmic complexity is really useful for thinking through how to solve problems. And, you know, sometimes you're going to run into something where you just need to write a custom clustering algorithm, or you just need to do something that's not in a package. And being able to do that efficiently and understand why your code is not running efficiently is really invaluable once you get kind of past the basics. So what won't you get from courses like this? And, you know, what do they lack?
So what these courses would lack is some real world use cases of this knowledge, right? So these courses would like lay some foundations of some theory and get you some familiarity with some, you know, mock data sets. But what these courses would lack is, you know, working with some real world data sets. And, you know, once you have some good understanding with these courses, I'd recommend just going to Kaggle and, you know, just picking out a data set that you love and just mess around with it, see what insights you can get from it. And, you know, if you need some help getting started, Kaggle also shows you work from some other people. And, you know, this is how I like learned a lot of exploratory data analysis when I was getting started with data science. You learn how to think when starting with a data set, you know, what things should you look for. And, you know, you just only learn these when you actually work with some real world data sets.
This might be a very basic question, but why is all of this helpful in your eyes for someone who's looking to join a data science team?
So for someone who wants a career in data science, these courses would be helpful because, you know, you'd have some core understanding of stuff, of data science, machine learning, and then you'd also have a lot of experience with some real-world data sets. So that's going to help you, you know, transition from, you know, dummy data sets to like very real-world data sets where, you know, everything is messy, nothing is clean, and you need to think of like clever ways to actually like make it cleaner, get some more information out of it, and then actually, you know, work on some machine learning algorithms on them.
So I'm wondering, you know, who would benefit from this course? Like, is this, or these resources, are they just for beginners, or is this something that, you know, anyone would be able to benefit from?
These courses would be helpful for beginners and someone who's already in the field and looking to refresh their knowledge on some basic algorithms, who want to pivot their career towards more machine learning, towards a more machine learning engineer side rather than like a data science side. Yeah, me being a machine learning engineer helps, you know, understand what these algorithms help in the real world. So, you know, just learning more core programming, getting more practice with coding would help anyone, I'd say.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, you know, honestly, even just reviewing the basics, like there's so many things you can do with NumPy and Pandas and Matplotlib that even just having another beginner's course, you're probably going to pick up on a few tricks that you, you know, may not have seen before or may have forgotten. So,
yeah, exactly. I've, you know, TA'd for one of the Intro to Data Science course, and being in the field for like a few years, just going to an Intro to Data Science helped me learn so many new skills that, you know, I didn't know, or things that didn't exist when I was taking an Intro to Data Science course.
I guess that's a good example of kind of the next question I'm going to ask, which is, did you have any light bulb moments taking these courses? Or I guess in this case, TAing for them, like were there any moments of just, oh, okay, I really get it now. Or honestly, even just to kind of expand the question, other moments that you really enjoyed from taking them?
Something that, you know, I really enjoyed is, I'll talk about the library called Matplotlib, which is a visualization library. And that's very complex if you start working on it at the beginning. Like, you know, you just are like, okay, well, how do I do this? How do I do that? It takes a lot of effort to, you know, get a basic visualization up. But once you start working on it more and more, you'd know how much customization you can do and how beautiful you can make the plots look by, you know, adding your own customization. And, you know, pretty plots are always very useful. So highly recommend messing more around with Matplotlib.
Okay, well, thank you for going over those courses, Smit. We're going to have a link to those. And I think we've got even a few other resources that we'll have a link to in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I would really like to brush up on some of these skills, please check the show notes for more information on how to find these resources. Thanks for coming on, Smit.
Thanks for having me.
And next up, we have Vish. Vish, this is your first time on the podcast. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'd love to give us a quick intro before we jump into talking about the book. Could you tell us who you are, what team you're on at Klaviyo, and what you do here?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Vish. I'm a data scientist in the Disco team under the data science pillow. And I'm currently working on incorporating natural language processing into some of our internal tools.
Fantastic. I think that's related to what we're here to talk about. I'll go ahead and start us off pretty generally. What are we here to talk about today?
Yeah, so I'm really excited to share this textbook. It's arguably one of the best textbooks I've read across many fields. It's called Speech and Language Processing by Jurafsky and Martin.
Generally, you know, what is this book about? What does this book teach you?
Yeah, so this book is essentially a comprehensive introduction to all things NLP. So everything from regular expressions to language models like BERT. When I was looking up the book right before this, I even saw that the newest edition had a chapter on chatbots, which is the talk of the town these days. So I was really excited to see that.
I guess that gives us maybe a preview of this, but what do you like about this book?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think one of the reasons I think this book is so good is because it's really encompassing and comprehensive. So if you were going camping and you took this book with you, you could walk out 2 weeks later with a really solid understanding of NLP. And I don't think at any point will you be ever limited by the lack of like internet access, mostly because that internet access doesn't really inhibit your learning. With a lot of other textbooks, I think you usually do a fair amount of Googling just to understand what's happening. And a great example of this would be the fact that NLP is so connected to linguistic theory. And this book does a great job of just sliding in the right amount of linguistics knowledge just when you need it. So if you didn't pay attention in high school grammar or didn't take linguistics in college, speech and language processing has got you covered.
It is a fairly bold claim. This is like one of the best textbooks you've read in like all textbooks you've read of all time. But it definitely sounds like it shares some characteristics of other books we've talked about here in a positive light, where it really does give you everything you need in a single package, I guess. So obviously it gives you some understanding of natural language processing, and it gives you a lot of the things you need to understand that in the first place. But on top of that, why would you say this book is helpful for someone who works in data science?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a great introduction for not just data scientists, but also just people interested in data science and trying to get involved in NLP. Because it's a textbook that tries to be really comprehensive, it might not make sense for everyone to read the entire book, but it's a great guide, at least, to have, mostly because I think today we kind of take for granted how great language models are, especially after transformers became a thing. But there are a lot of other types of NLP models that came before transformers that were more rooted in statistics compared to neural networks that this book introduces. And it's really good to know where you came from, not just what we have now.
This actually did not click before recording when you said what book we're going to be talking about, but I actually love this book. I didn't realize that this is the book that you're talking about. I use this book for reference quite a lot. So yeah, I can validate that this is truly a great textbook. And yeah, I think what you said is right, which is that it's, you maybe don't need to read the whole thing cover to cover in one sitting, but it's really great for reference on a wide variety of topics. So Who would you recommend reads this book? Is this a book for beginners or experts?
Well, I think everyone should read the book if they haven't, but it's a great book for beginners, I think. And it's also the reason it's one of the most like widely used books, I think, in like sort of intro to NLP classes. And that's actually how I found the book in college. So shout out to my professor, Lillian Lee.
I guess given that this is something that you're recommending to beginners, and oftentimes when you are beginning in a field, what really helps you get something is just having those light bulb moments, the, oh, I get it. Did you have any of those when you were reading this book?
Oh, yeah, I had a couple. Also, I forgot to mention, you can get the book for free online, and they're also making a new edition. So it's constantly updated, which is
that's fantastic. We'll make sure we have a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, so coming back to light bulb moment, I think for me, it was just learning about attention and why everything is parallelizable now compared to, or I guess what the advantage is over RNNs, at least with transformers, and why we need so fewer resources to train such large models. And I think that's very relevant with models just getting bigger and bigger now. And so the race right now is just, how do we cram a large amount of data into these extremely big models? And companies like Google and Microsoft are just fighting to build the biggest model.
We've talked about a lot of the good side of this book. I think so far it's been a pretty glowing recommendation. I do think we need to ask, are there any things you don't like about this book?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things that the book is missing is essentially code. So this book is based in theory. So if you're trying to get a good understanding of the math behind what's going on, intuition for how these models work, it does a really good job at that, but it doesn't really provide you with like code snippets that you can use or link you to, I don't know, useful libraries. And I think that might be one of the only things I didn't like in this book. But yeah.
Is there anything else that we should know about this book?
Yeah, I think another book that's widely recommended is Foundations of Statistical Natural Language Processing. And so one difference between this book and the book I recommended was that Foundations of Statistical Natural Language Processing covers fewer topics, but goes a little more in detail about these topics. So with speech and language processing, I think with some of the chapters, you might be left with this yearn for knowledge, I guess, because you want to learn more about what they're trying to say. But it's hard to do both, be comprehensive and go super in depth about many of these topics. So I guess if you wanted two books, then get Foundations of Statistical Natural Language Processing and Speech and Language Processing. But if you're just starting off and you're looking for one book, I guess Speech and Language Processing is probably the way to go, especially if you're looking to incorporate like linguistic theory into your NLP study.
Very nice. Yeah, as we've talked about on this podcast before, natural language processing is big. It's big enough that we spent two entire episodes going into the foundations of it and then some applications of it. And as we're seeing in the world today, it's just driving more and more compelling product vision in the world. So definitely, if you are interested in learning more about NLP, consider checking out this book. If you aren't interested in learning more about NLP, I don't know, send a postcard to us and tell us why. Please don't do that. In the meantime, I just want to say again, thank you, Vish, for coming on and explaining why people should read this book and giving everyone a great resource to go through.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It was great to be here.
Thanks, Vish.
Now, Zach, you did mention when we were putting this episode together that you had a book that you wanted to talk about as well.
Yeah, you know, we really have covered a lot of great resources on this show, and I'm actually not just saying that. I love some of the textbooks we've talked about. I've bought some of the books that people had talked about that I didn't know about, and I truly recommend everything. But I wanted to bring a resource to people's attention that maybe is like a little different from the types of things that we've talked about so far.
Interesting. So it sounds like I might have spoken incorrectly when I said a book. I might have misread the Slack message. What are we here to talk about right now?
Sorry, it is indeed a book.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. My podcast host integrity was on the line there.
Don't worry, you're safe for today. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the book, The Signal and the Noise by Nate Silver, which people may recognize the name Nate Silver. He's probably the most famous political data scientist of all time. Kind of came onto the scene in 2008, 2012 with highly accurate predictions of those presidential elections. He founded the 538 News website, which does a really good job of taking a little bit more of a quantitative and objective approach to public events or current events and news than, you know, some other news sites. So he's been on the scene for a while as a pretty famous data scientist and has done a lot to think about how we communicate quantitative ideas to maybe a non-technical audience.
Gotcha. Okay. That gives me the high level. Give me the pitch. Why should I read this book?
Yeah. So I think what I really like about this book is that it's more about the intuition around solving quantitative problems. You know, a lot of these books are around specific techniques that you can apply and maybe very specific instances where you might use them. But this book takes a very high level, kind of wholesome approach to how should we approach problems of prediction? How can you look at a problem and kind of get an intuitive sense of what the system at play is and how to approach that for a modeling problem? And I think that he does a really good job of balancing bringing in technical ideas and bringing in mathematical ideas. You know, there's some kind of high level conversation about Bayesian statistics, some basic probability, some basic game theory, but it's all very approachable. It's all very accessible. I actually read this book when I was really just getting started out learning about all this. This was a required reading for my intro econometrics class some years ago, and I got a lot out of it then, and I've read it since. I had really not written any code or knew very much about this stuff back then, and I've read it since and got even more out of it. So I think it does a really good job of making these technical ideas accessible to a broader audience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So obviously makes things accessible to a broader audience. As a data scientist, as someone actually like working in the field, what do you think someone can get from the book?
You know, I think it's a little too easy these days to approach data science problems just kind of rushing into it, just throwing a bunch of data at a model and saying, you know, give me a good result. And, you know, there are a lot of very complex models that will just give you a good result if you ask for it. But there are a lot of risks there. And I think, and this book really kind of instills this kind of philosophy and kind of epistemological point of view, that it's important to try to understand the system that you're trying to model. That it's important to have an internal mental understanding and mental model of what's really going on. And then you can try to approach, how do I get data out of this system to reflect what intuitively should make sense? And this is kind of, you know, what the title gets at. There's the signal and the noise. You know, the signal is what in your data is really pointing to the result that you're trying to predict. What is the real indicator of what's going on? And the noise is, you know, just everything else. It's just all that data that maybe seems really tempting. You know, it looks like it might be promising, but at the end of the day, is just going to make your model a little more complicated. And I think if you're trying to build really robust modeling systems that can respond to changing environments and can, you know, are flexible enough to kind of deal with complex systems, it really helps to have an intuitive understanding and to approach problems that way instead of just assuming that, hey, I'll just throw a giant neural network at this and it will, you know, it'll solve all my problems. So I think it's important for data scientists to read this just from kind of a philosophical point of view, I guess.
I'm guessing the question we typically ask about beginners, experts, both, it sounds like the answer is both and also people who aren't necessarily either.
Yeah. I think what's cool about this book is it is truly accessible to people who have no prior knowledge or experience in statistics. And the book actually talks a lot about common psychological pitfalls in prediction. Why do we tend to wildly overestimate some things and kind of issues with how we communicate with those? Like why, when the media just says, you know, there's a 40% chance of this thing happening, that really doesn't take the uncertainty into account and it drives decisions in a, you know, maybe not ideal way. So I actually think that this book is particularly useful to understanding kind of the mindset of data science and the mindset of statistical problem solving for people who have no mathematical background and maybe are not interested in becoming a data scientist.
Yeah, I'm sure Nate Silver, if I remember correctly, has a background in baseball statistics as well, kind of before political even, like, you know, sabermetrics and all of that. So I'm assuming you probably have things like hot hand fallacy or like the the quote unquote their due fallacy addressed as well.
Yeah.
So you get those a lot.
So Nate Silver, so he has a whole history of sports statistics, also is a pretty big poker player, which fits neatly at the intersection of, you know, probability and game theory.
Yeah, I was going to say that fits, that scans.
Right. Yeah. So he talks about a lot of practical examples. He brings in sports examples. He brings in human biases around why people don't understand climate change, why people don't understand political predictions. He talks about very complex systems like forecasting weather. And he brings these all to this intuitive level with all of these concepts that we're talking about, all of these, like, you know, psychological and game theory aspects to it in a way that's so approachable and I think really useful for anyone to read.
Yeah. On the flip side, what do you not like about this book?
You know, it is a really good book. I think it's not the shortest or most like light beach read of a book because of all the reasons that I've explained. I've tried to get some people who are not as interested in quantitative stuff to read this book, and not everyone has made it till the end, not because they weren't interested, but because it can be a little dense. And, you know, Nate Silver really cares about this and really goes quite in depth. So I guess that's not necessarily something bad. I like that it's a very comprehensive and thorough book, but that to people who pick it up, that may be the reason that some people don't get to the end.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there anything else we should know about The Signal and the Noise?
I don't think so. I think it's a pretty good read. I guess it was written, I think, in 2012, which at this point is quite a while ago. It, you know, does not really take into account developments in neural networks and how those are used to solve problems. You know, there were some very notable misuses of statistics and public information since 2012, which don't get discussed in any way. And even, you know, Nate Silver and 538 were somewhat involved in some of these things. So there's a lot of modern context that's not in this book. But for the basics, for the foundations, I think it still does a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a bit of time, 11 years as the crow flies. Well, thank you for discussing The Signal and the Noise with us. The two of us, you and me. And I believe that brings us to the end of the episode for this month. So everyone out there, thank you for tuning in. This episode, as always, is sponsored by Klaviyo. All episodes of the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast are. If you're interested in learning more about Klaviyo, Klaviyo is a unified customer platform for email, SMS, and more that empowers online brands to own their own data and grow on their own terms. If you liked what you heard on this episode, if you are interested in checking out any of the resources that we talked about, reading any of the books that we mentioned, make sure that you go over to Medium. Medium will have the full show notes, which includes the links to all of the resources that we're talking about, whether that be a free PDF or a link to a page where you can buy the book. We don't have affiliate links. We're not making money off of this. You can just trust our links. The link to that will be directly in the show notes, or if you found us through the Medium page, then obviously you already have the Medium page. Also, if you liked what you heard on this episode and you are interested in hearing more along these lines, check out that history. Go ahead, subscribe to the podcast, look us up in whatever podcast distribution network you use. This is the third episode about resources that are helpful for every data scientist. So if you want to hear more, we have two entire other episodes where we talk about this exact same thing. In addition, feel free to rate the podcast, to give us a thumbs up in Spotify. All of that helps us in the algorithm, helps us show up to more people. Leaving a review, same deal there. Again, that's just a good way to make sure that if you liked what you heard here, other people get to hear the same content that you heard. A great way to do that also, share this episode directly, especially episodes like this, where we are discussing things that are useful for people who are potentially on the job market or potentially looking to change careers. Feel free to share this directly so that people have these resources to look at. In addition, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns about what you heard in this episode, the best person to reach is me. The best place to reach me is my Twitter account. That's Lawson_M_T, LAWSON_M_T. Thank you for listening. Have a great month.